Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Kate Loving-Shank, and Joan Adams and I host this show. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Our special guest this evening is the Reverend Joanne Glass, and we will be discussing death and rebirth. Joanne is loved by many and has been a pioneer in healing and loving for as long as I've known her, and I believe that's been more than 40 years. Joining me now is Joan Adams. Hello, Joan.
Hello, Kate. I can't stop sneezing. Hello.
Oh, no, I wonder what that means.
I don't know. Isn't that interesting?
Maybe Joanne will know. Just a minute. Hello, Joanne.
Huh? Hello. I was listening to that little introduction. My God, who is that person you're talking about? I'd be interested in meeting her, too.
It's all about you.
It's all about me, right?
That is too funny.
Yeah, that is funny. Yes, that's. I think
well,
that's
amazing. It has to do with who am I really, and God knows who any of us are, right?
Yeah, isn't it the truth? Yes, coming to terms with that's the big one. Yeah.
And
yeah,
we know the least.
Yeah. Excuse me. Go ahead.
I was just saying we know the least of anybody.
Yeah.
Who we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lifelong journey. For sure.
It sure
so how
is.
Are you, Joanne?
I'm good today. Really, this has been a pretty good day. The sun came out this afternoon, and you could see the blue sky, and it was very nice. Although, you know, the rain we've had for the last 3 days has been very welcome. It's the kind of weather you want to sit in bed and read a book with, you know. You can't do that because there's stuff to do.
Right.
So it's been a good day. How's yours been? Good?
Great. It has been beautiful here, too, and we've had rain for the last couple of days, thank goodness, because we needed it desperately.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got more on the way, but we have a little break here today. So,
yeah,
about 70 degrees and absolutely perfect out there.
Well, it got kind of warm here today before it was all over. So, and
kind of humid.
Yeah.
Humid. Yeah. So you sound really great on the phone, Joanne.
Do
it.
I? Good.
Yes,
yeah.
I do. Very sophisticated.
Sounds
yeah.
Good. Intoxicated
with
that
love.
Thing? With love. Tell me. Well, you know, I've been mulling over this subject. It's a very, it'd be kind of daunting subject we've got going here. I've listened, you know, I'm a fan of your program, and I sit and listen to Sheila. She does her stuff, and it's always so much fun, and. And I realize also that I'm a vintage person here. You were commenting on that, and I...
a vintage person.
Vintage person. I mean, you know, 86 years old. I can't really... I wrap my mind around that, and I don't know where the time went or how it got to be that long. And it doesn't seem that long, but it certainly is. And we have known each other, Kate, for it's been 40 years, hasn't it?
Yeah,
a long
40
time.
Wow.
It was a 70s phenomenon.
In the 70s, yes. In the 70s. And I know I participated in your mother's funeral and also did your dad's.
Oh, my gosh. Wasn't that something?
That was really something.
No, I guess all of your funerals are that intense, aren't they?
Well, yes. I approach... funerals, a transit, you know, with a great deal of respect and depth.
Mm-hmm.
I use the astrological chart information, and And you know, and many people I have officiated at their ceremonies, at their funeral services, I haven't known. You know, and usually they come up and say, "My gosh, you knew that so well. You knew them so well." And this is where the astrological chart can really be helpful, because it and you listen to the stories that people tell about their loved one, or in some cases not their loved one. You know.
Mm-hmm,
in
mm-hmm.
some cases, those have been the real challenges. I can think of a real close friend whose mother died, and this woman was a true tyrant. She was she would beat her daughter with wands and sticks and stuff. And
oh.
If she didn't do things properly according to her agenda, for example, if the young girl would finish a job more efficiently and quickly than she was supposed to, she would be forced to do it again and beaten for not doing it as long as it should have taken. And that friend is... So working with that woman's funeral was really interesting, because it turned out
mm-hmm.
that she was a servant in the mainline aristocracy's homes as a young girl. And this is the way she was treated.
Yeah,
this is the way she was treated.
That's what she knew.
That's what she knew, and she was very kind to her sons. But her daughter was really just absolutely punished beyond belief. And Madeline Catherine, I know, ran away from home at an early age, twice I think, and finally did make it. But we managed to do that funeral with everybody appreciating. appreciating this woman, whatever her son said, you know, I can really begin to grab this. So there's always, you really at a occasion like that, I do always believe in acknowledging the truth about somebody, but also trying to place it in a perspective that will give meaning to it and dimension to it and show you something that's been learned here that you can learn from it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe a okay. healing. Maybe a big point.
Healing
sort
is
of
the
healing.
Point. Healing
yeah.
is the point.
Yeah.
To me, healing is the point. That's the whole thing.
Well, it also sounds like the scenario that you just gave us, that forgiveness was a huge thing there.
Yes, yes. It was a huge
yeah.
thing. This particular friend is now used that. She learned during the experience of brutality. She took care of her mother and loved her mother and really was very, very protective of her mother and all through her life. And in the experience of being beaten like that, she learned how to do that animal thing, going into that suspended animation, that frozen space, you know?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where she, and now she's an excellent animal groomer. She knows animals. She communicates with them. It's really, so that's what forgiveness and acceptance and working with yourself in relationship to the life you've been given and worked with can do for you, because a remarkable woman.
Well, that's
yeah.
a neat story, very
mm-hmm.
neat story.
Yep, it is. I Oh, well, what do you want
well,
to what, what, what's your questions about that? You said about...
Well,
what's
I was thinking about how death is really one of the most feared
yeah.
things that people... have in their lives, you know. They,
yep. mm-hmm.
I think they're more afraid of death, or maybe they say public speaking is even something more intensely fearsome than
mm-hmm.
death. But I really don't believe that's true. I think that people are very terrified of death, and they spend most of their lives avoiding it, avoiding
yeah.
the thought, avoiding. You know, our culture really is not out front with the subject
yeah.
of death whatsoever,
yep.
and. You know, there's a few other things that our culture is not really good with, but I think death is one of the biggest ones that we have not really brought out of the closet.
Yeah.
And another one is the false beliefs about aging, and people are terrified of aging.
And you
get to a certain, and you, I'm sure you've seen it, too. I mean, just the way
well,
people
Well, I look in the mirror. I look at that, and I look at it.
You and you both. Like, who is that?
Well, I still recognize her. But
do you?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
I see my mom sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I came across this. Are you ready for a piece of humor, an email humor piece? It's if my body were a car. If my body were a car, this is the time I would be thinking about trading it in for a newer model. I've got bumps and dents and scratches in my finish, and my paint job is getting a little dull, but that's not the worst of it. My headlights are out of focus. It's especially hard to see things up close. My traction is not as graceful as it once was, and I slip and slide and skid and bump into things, even in the best of weather. My white walls are stained with varicose veins. It takes me hours to reach my maximum speed, and my fuel rate burns inefficiently. But here's the worst of it. Almost every time I sneeze, cough, or sputter, either my radiator leaks or my exhaust backfires.
That's cute.
Yeah, that's cute. That's cute. I thought that was cute, too. Yeah. Well, yes.
I had an internet joke recently by a woman who is retiring on Friday from my job, and she just loved this joke. She just goes on and on about it. It's about a 65-year-old woman, the first woman in the world to ever have a baby that old. And so
I've read about her, yeah.
Have you heard of this one?
Yes, I read about this woman, yeah.
Well, it's a joke, actually.
The woman who did that, though. It really is the woman who
Okay. Well, people go to her house, and they say, I want to see the baby. Where is she? And the woman ignores them and goes on in conversation. And the people say, they keep pressing, well, where's this baby? I really want to see her. And the 65-year-old woman just says, you'll just have to hold on a little bit. And finally, people just batter her mercilessly. Where is this baby? Where is this baby? She goes, well, we're going to have to wait for it to cry. And they said, why? She goes, because I don't know where she is. This woman who's retiring is just all over this thing. She just loves it. She laughs, and everybody's sort of like, oh, okay, yeah, that's kind of funny. But anyway.
But they're not old enough to get it.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Yes.
You have to spend all day looking for something to really appreciate that.
Yeah, the fear is the big factor there. But you know, there's a number of things now working in our world that are helping to overcome that. I think in the spiritual realm, I don't know. Do you know about the Ouroboros?
The Ouroboros.
Ouroboros. Ouroboros.
No.
You know that. That's when I learned about that. That's when I began. I've been all my life interested. I was one of these kids that was a believing child. I mean, I sit there in the church and listen and believe all the stuff. You know, I really did, looking for it. And healing was a big factor and inspiration for me and how to get things healed. You know, and then the whole concept of birth and death come in there very quickly because in face of illness and catastrophic illnesses and how do you handle them and what do you do with them I heard about the Ouroboros and the fact that this dragon or snake or creature, whatever, of mythic proportions, discovered the only way that death was the entry to life itself, and it discovered by discovering its own tail and beginning to eat its own self, that dying was an everyday, moment by moment thing that happened, that's the secret of life and of healing. And I got onto that, and that has been. And if you Google that, you will have information beyond the kazoo about the Ouroboros. It goes back to way to Egypt and all the Norse legends. It factors in almost every culture that concept of the serpent or dragon eating itself, consuming itself in order to live, discovering that dying is the entry to life. That's it. And
that's interesting because. In order to overcome the fear of death of yourself or your loved ones, it seems that you have to understand that it is an every moment-to-moment occurrence, that there's more than death. I would call it rebirth or something is fading, something is dying into another form, and you can just see it all the time. You can see it with the seasonal change right now. You know, not everybody has a seasonal change. I'll say that, but here in Pennsylvania, we really do. Well, pretty soon, not quite yet, but pretty soon we're going to have some beautiful leaves.
It's the beginning, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
just tremendous, colorful, panoramic, just a feast for the eyes. And then the leaves, I can't believe what it's like around here, because when all the leaves fall off the trees, we can see way down the river. And then what is really, really beautiful during the winter months, and winter, it seems to be a pretty long time, you know, kind of like an endless cycle, but of course it isn't. You see all the beautiful, every time, moment on the river is completely different because of the light. And the light is always different, and I'm thinking, too, I think light is somehow a pivotal signature here about what that light is just an is the key to awareness, and if you can catch the light, you know that you're alive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that concept of going to the edge of all the darkness you have and taking one more step and bringing light into that which was dark before, and then you can see. It's a matter of perspective, and one of the other concepts of death, which really took a lot of the fear of it out of for me, is the fact that begin looking at the daily life you live and seeing how many things die every day. The concepts out, you know, how you're. When you're open-minded and you're open-hearted, when you're willing to, think not that you can guide the course of love. For love, if it finds you worthy, will guide your course. If you're willing to do that, and you're going to discover some hurtful places, and some concepts are going to die. I mean, and it's so death is a daily thing. You can. Every day you look at something, you can. If it's been a successful day, something has changed, something has deepened, some perspective has been enlightened. Some of the big jolts, of course, it's harder than that. When you hit a real betrayal or a real catastrophe, then you're taken to another place with it. But the whole concept of death is a constant companion, and it's the heart of life itself lies in that continuum. Did that make sense to you? Did that make sense?
Oh, it totally did.
Well, the other thing that made that was the figure eight. I don't know if you've ever figure eight. This is another big enlightenment for me about loosening up of death. When I discovered meditation, I discovered that the figure eight, which is a sign of eternity. And,
eternal lemniscate.
Lemniscate, yes. And you get on that. And I discovered that when I got into meditation, I discovered that the figure eight was not a rut, but it was a continuous loop, like a Möbius circle, you know, that just kept going in and of itself, and it was going somewhere. When you had the ability to look at it from a distant spot, and then come back to the rut you formed in your daily life and bring new insight from that meditative point into that what had been rut in your daily life, your linear life, then you discovered a whole new adventure, a whole new meaning, a whole new way to interpret not only yourself but see others in a more comfortable way, in a more healing way.
Kind of an ongoingness
of life. It's not the same old rut, not the same old boredom. It brings excitement and passion. And passion is it. Love is the answer. Love is the answer. So here it is. Yeah.
Well, the eternal lemniscate reminds me of the aurora boris that you were just talking about.
Yeah, ouroboros,
I think there's something.
Yep, that's a signature. Yeah, that's one of the forms, yes.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Yep.
So we've been talking about this on the prayer blog quite a bit. I think it all came about because I thought last week's performance by Delaney was really spectacular. And the time that he the first act that he had done, which was in June, was also wonderful. But this one, he wrote me a little letter and he explained that I don't know how many people in the there's not so many people in the chat. There's a few people in the chat room, but how many people listened to it? But he was describing Isis and the whole mythic proportions and of unconditional love is really at the heart of everything. Mm-hmm. But when he told the story about tossing our mother's ashes out
yes.
into the ocean,
yes.
there was a little shard of bone that was stuck in his testicles. And, you know, that one detail seems
mm-hmm.
to hang everybody up, you know. It's like of all the comments he had gotten about that performance last week,
that was the
kind of like that was the one, what he wanted people to get was the whole unconditional love, which
yeah.
is what it's all about. I mean, the
yeah.
more unconditionally loving we can become, the less judgmental, you know, the less the dropping assumptions and opinions and just being with what is, you know, like
yeah.
the Byron Katie stuff.
Yeah.
Just really being with what is and loving it too. I mean, understanding that there is the situation you described in the beginning. There are mothers that beat their children, and there are people that kill dogs, and there are people that commit genocide, and there is a lot of horror in the world. And it's not something that I spend a lot of time with my friends trying to talk about saving these, you know, how to prevent these things from happening, but in
mm-hmm.
reality, there's no way you can.
No.
And because that is what is.
Yeah, no, that is what is. I think particularly of you in your profession too, birth, because the stillborn babies. Those are the hard ones, and I remember.
No, you can't really
yeah.
say anything to the people
no.
except letting them find it within themselves.
Yeah.
And what I'll never forget, one time, this one beautiful woman. It was terribly, terribly poignantly tragic
yeah.
that they lost this baby.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if the baby had lived a little bit or not, but I'll never forget, I went to see her a few days after we had, you know, the baby died. We were all with her. We took pictures. We we spent a lot of time sitting with her, not saying much of anything, and just really doing what we had to do. And then what's really disgusting about the whole, all that stuff, is all the paperwork that needs to be done.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But anyway, besides that, I finally went to see her, and she said to me that she wouldn't change any of it,
mm-hmm.
that it was the most profoundly intense experience of her
yeah.
life,
yeah.
and she had
yeah.
never felt closer to God in
yeah.
her life.
Yeah.
Now, so many people say, why me? Why would God do this? There's a lot of that. But
yeah.
she did not.
She did not.
Yeah.
That's a big one. That's a big one, because I think of you have to be able to put this into that larger perspective and grow through it and see it in that larger wisdom place, you know, instead of getting
mm-hmm.
stuck in resentment and sorrow and just continuing revolving and completely and eventually into bitterness and
yes.
to resentment and becoming a victim of this death that, you know, because there's a doorway to life in every death. That's
yes.
the whole point. That's the absolute whole point. And
yes.
and the thing right now that we're in right now in this spiritual realm of place in this linear time and space is an enormous opportunity to link with the greatest life force available, which is the self. I mean, death. We're just like tossing off your coat and going into another dimension. You know, it's what we're doing. And to be able to comprehend that and begin to work with yourself in relationship to that thought and become one with it, it can teach you so much about yourself, and that's the whole point. Bernie Siegel said this. I came across this quote. He said, "Life is a labor pain. We are here to give birth to ourselves, and death. The door of death is the door of life, and getting those two." Concepts, working with yourself to get those concepts together can just be enormously rewarding in your personal linear life as you deal with it in your spiritual life, one or the other.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that comprehensible?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
Joan, what are you doing? What are you doing? Joan has not said a word.
Oh, I'm just listening. I'm just listening and thinking of all the questions. I want to come sit down and have a cup of coffee with you, about 4 or 5 cups of coffee.
Okay. I feel like I
want
know you, though.
I want to know how many – you've done a ton of funerals, I know.
Yes, I have.
What – and my sister and I have this book that's been – with. It's been being written for years.
Mm-hmm.
I hope she's listening to this.
Uh-huh.
But we kind of collect funeral stories, you know.
Oh, what, yeah. Uh-huh.
What's the most interesting funeral you ever either attended or directed or whatever?
Interesting.
I don't know. One of my favorite obits, and we collect those too, is a lady who died, and in the obit it says she will be missed by her friends at Joe's Poker Room. You know.
Oh, great!
I just love it. But I think now. And y'all were talking about how in this society we haven't learned much, but I do think we're moving to having more real funerals.
Yes.
I think we've learned to stop all the pretense and hogwash and all that stuff and make it real and make it relate to the people that are actually there.
Yeah.
I know my stepmom, when my stepmom died and her daughter had actually planned all of it. It was perfectly lovely. But the congregation sang Jesus Loves Me.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought it was the sweetest because Mary Jim had worked with children her whole life.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But to make it real and relevant to, I was trying to think of some of the craziest ones we've seen. Seems like that's what we do. You know, we've hit the age where somebody dies every other week around here.
Oh, boy,
like,
yeah.
You know, we just hit that point in life where you spend your time going to funerals. We went to a wonderful one here about 2 weeks ago. well-respected lady. We had more fun, and we had a ball.
That's great.
This very well-respected lady in town died. And she had been on every committee in town, and she was just a lovely, lovely, lovely human being. And they had a big dinner in the church social hall afterwards. Well, everybody in town was there. You know, it was like old home week. Do you have more fun at funerals the older you get? I think you do.
Yeah.
I think the older you get, the more fun they get. But, I mean, you just couldn't move through the tables fast enough. You couldn't. I was just, you know, I was trying to get to tables and trying to see everybody. And it was just a glorious tribute to her life.
Well, it sounds to me like her life was like that. She attracted that in her. In this ceremony, celebrating the end of her life, she brought that energy there, and everybody was just rejoicing. I remember I did a funeral. You remember Bonnie Steckel? We did her funeral, and we ended up with the saints come marching in.
Oh, I love it.
That was more fun, and we all got up and marched around.
Oh, did you?
Oh, that's
we
great.
Did. It was great. Wasn't that great?
Oh, that's too cool.
Yeah,
that
it was
that
too
I
cool.
love.
And I know I can't. I don't have it anymore. I'd mail it to you. I discarded it a couple weeks ago. I came across this obituary in the newspaper, and what got my attention was this woman had a Dr. Seuss hat on. And it was the obituary was so funny. It was just, she obviously was an absolutely lovely, funny lady, and part of it was saying, and she even threw her bedpan at her son-in-law for being nasty, for being nasty. There's a lady who knew how to live and died well, you know?
Yes.
And now my ex-husband's funeral, that thing went on for 2.5 hours at the seminary because he was, and it was a big thing. His widow, his second wife, we were both there, and that was a moment of real. I wake up sometimes with cold sweats of horror at some things that happened at that funeral.
No.
Hysterical.
It was, oh, my God. It had its moments of real, oh, my God.
human.
You can imagine, you know.
Oh. The human stuff, right?
Well, yeah, because the thing about me is, you see, my mouth starts going, and I'll just say, I'll say the truth. I'll give, God.
Yeah.
So I'm sure the people, I'm sure there were moments in that in that service where they had more information than they really wanted. bless my heart, they got it anyway. So there you go. There you have got. It was funny.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I love that. I love it.
The biggest gift anybody has got in life, death, or anywhere is a sense of humor. Without that, we're up Schitt's Creek without a paddle.
You are so right.
Yeah.
You know, my husband says he doesn't want a funeral. He wants a golf tournament.
No. There you go. Why not? Yeah. Something like that. I agree with that.
Wonderful.
But I noticed it in the South because we've always had such, in my mind, very strict and rigid rules about funerals, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, fry that chicken. Make that casserole, you know. But I think we're learning about making them personal and real.
Yeah.
And so that they're a comfort to people.
Yeah.
It means nothing to go listen to a bunch of stuff.
No, it's
got to
be real. Yeah.
But if you can laugh and enjoy some of the happy times, and I know a friend of ours, her husband died, and I was out of town. But anyway, Whitey and the kids went, and they had a dinner afterwards up here at the club and roasted him.
Oh, my.
That's funny.
And
that's
they
great.
Said it was hysterical.
I bet.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody
loved it. Yeah. You laugh a while and cry a while, but you remember that life with such joy.
Such joy, yeah.
And the other question, I wasn't silent because I wasn't listening. I was thinking, I've just got a million questions to ask you. In my thinking, as I age and think through death, I keep thinking, well, I'm reaching the point that I've got as many loved ones on the other side as I do on this side.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay, good. That makes me feel less weird. Thank you.
One of the most sweet things I ever, and I use it, not always, but sometimes you'll love this one. A guy named Luther Burson. I forgot now who wrote it, but it's here. We're standing here. We're standing.
Slow down.
Seashore.
You talk too fast, folks in the
we're
south.
We're standing. I'm excited about this. here we are. This is the scene. We're standing at the seashore. And this ship is about to sail away, and of course, this is what we're talking about here: is the soul is dying, right? The guy, we're missing him. Everybody's crying and sobbing and saying goodbye. And it's interesting because we watch this; it's going slowly out of sight, and just as it reaches the horizon, and so we can't see anymore. We hear. Echoing from the other side, joyful welcomes of, oh, here he comes, or here she comes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And we're realizing that's what death is, nothing at all. It's just there's a host of friends and relatives waiting on the other side. So this is a celebration on both sides. We're grief on one side and welcoming on the other. Now, I was as fortunate enough as was Kate to be with one of my first and deepest experiences with death was with my mother, and she died a very efficient death of colon cancer. It took only 6 weeks.
Ooh.
And I learned a lot. I learned a lot about life from my mother and how to how the healing how oh, the thing okay the oh, slow down grass okay
yeah you have to slow down because
slow
I can't
down.
Listen that fast.
I was with her one night, and we, oh God, bless her. I said, when I first heard that sound that's called a rail, you know, there's a difference in the breathing of a person. It's a sharp inhalation. It's a sound you'll never forget. I'll never forget. And I heard it when I was in clinical pastoral work too in the hospitals, and I knew what it meant. But it was, and I was holding her, and she was saying she couldn't breathe, and I said, Mother, you're speaking, you're breathing, you know, you're okay. But then there was this big, I mean, it's a sound I'll never forget. I was holding her, and it was, if you can imagine, know, those big redwood, you know, the redwood trees. If you can imagine one of those just being pulled right up out of the ground, the kind of energy. That's the kind of energy. It was a whoosh.
Wow.
It was. It
wow.
Was, oh my God! And it was an accompanying noise that went with it. That I it sends chills through me yet. And she was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
after the. This was at 3 or 4 in the morning, and after everything was all settled and her body was gone, and I went back to bed, because we all went back to bed then, I had this vision. And as a matter of fact, I had this vision of the tunnel. You know, as you see, I watched the spirits go back and forth, and I knew hers had gone through that tunnel into heaven. And then on the other side of it, I was given the vision of a whole street full of lined with people, and she was in a cart or a car or some sort of vehicle, and was being welcomed home. Being
oh,
welcomed
that's
home.
Wonderful.
With just great song and joy and praise. You know, you did such a good job. It was that whole feeling of success. And I'm telling you, that's it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. That is it. That is, honest to God, that's it. That's the whole package right there. And death is really just one of those things that we live with and don't realize we're living with it as comfortably as we do. And it really does not have to be the great terror that we fear. And we have skills and implements at hand these days to see through that, because every single one of us who is working on looking at ourselves, claiming ourselves, becoming whole and friendly and empowered with ourselves, is working to become deathless. Deathless.
Deathless.
Yeah.
Deathless. Deathless.
I like that term. I was wondering, too, as a woman is pregnant,
mm-hmm.
and as you're pregnant, you don't think you can actually deliver. I never did. I was, why is this thing going to happen to me?
Yeah.
And somehow nature takes over at that moment, and you're an entirely different person, an entirely different place.
Yeah.
And I almost feel that same kind of thing happening as I age, that the idea is not as appalling to me as it was back when.
No.
And a real belief that when that time comes, nature, a.k.a. God, a.k.a.
Mm-hmm.
whatever, will take over for me.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a great image,
great, yes.
Really.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, see, but I'd like to be friends with that nature and that God right now.
Excuse me?
I don't want to wait until then.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're not saying that that's what you're doing. See, it's...
that's not what I'm saying.
No, that's not what you're saying. I know you're not, but I think I can think of a couple of people with whom I have conversations like this who don't quite seem to get that point, and I have not discovered the way to successfully articulate it.
That's something you can give somebody. I think that's
No. They ask you the question, you know, and you try to, indeed. I learned that, yes.
Mm-hmm. But I do think that like with the pregnancies, you
mm-hmm.
move into a different dimension of this life
at
that point, at
you
that
do.
Point of delivery. Kate, you agree?
I do.
Oh, yeah, it's really cool.
It's really
especially,
cool because you become almost a different...
Especially when they go natural, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't go natural, but my job at that point was to give birth.
Yeah.
And nothing else. Everything else went out of sight. Nothing else.
Yeah.
Matters at that
I can remember my pregnancies. I'd look and thinking, how am I going to do this? And I'd watch women with babies, and I think, well, now she could do that. If she can do that, I can certainly do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think, my gosh, how is this going to happen?
How is
especially
this happen?
With the
I
first
can't believe
one.
I'm in there. Yeah.
It's like, how in the world is this going to work? I mean, I can't quite figure this thing out. Amazingly, babies have been born since forever, you know.
Forever.
I'd say, you know, they've
that's
been
right.
born. People have been having babies for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm not
right.
the first.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, they have been for a long time. Yeah.
Right.
I have there's a caller here. I wonder if they would like to say something. Let me just see.
Okay.
Hello there.
Oh, hi. I've just been listening.
Okay.
If you want, I could contribute, I guess. I come from an Irish background, so when you describe those southern funerals, where my family, and I mean from Ireland, like first generation, it's always been usually some type of celebration. The one, though, that I felt a little bit odd about was my cousin. In 2005, she died of breast cancer, so she was like in her 50s. And the music in the funeral parlor was all very loud, Beatles music.
Oh, wow.
Beatles music.
Because I was a bit younger, it reminded me more of, you know, going out on dates and dances, and it was just a little bit too much for me, but a lot of people liked it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I also have cousins that go to the cemetery on picnics.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
all the time. I don't know. I'm a little leery of that. But I thought I would tell you those two things to contribute to your story.
What is your name?
Oh, my name is Ann.
Ann?
Yes, Ann. That's neat.
Well, thank you for joining us. That's great.
Oh, welcome. You're welcome.
It's neat.
Steve is saying in the chat room, I don't know if you saw that, Kate, but Steve is saying his dad was a minister and he would love this lady.
I know. It's so cute.
Well, I'm an unconventional, yeah. People come up to me and say, well, you know, who are you and where do you do it? Well, you do. I've been very fortunate. I've never had to have a church. I do weddings and funerals and other rites of passage and laying on of hands healing in a open forum, but I'm a Unitarian because I grew up as a Presbyterian most of my life. I've been molded of everything. I even tried. I was Southern Baptist. I was Southern Baptist for 2 years in college.
I was too.
Yeah,
isn't
were you too?
Nice
were you too?
The Presbyterians teach us how to think, though.
Well, you know, Southern. Excuse me. Go ahead.
The Presbyterians teach us it's okay to ask the questions.
Yeah.
Which I love. I just love that. I like not having to stay in a box.
Yeah.
But because I went from Presbyterian childhood, everything all the way through. I did do the Baptist for 2 years, but went from Presbyterian to Unity.
Yeah.
And
Unity.
I'm still
good.
Presbyterian, but I'm Unity at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is very similar to Unitarian.
Mm-hmm.
There's
very,
some differences,
there, yeah.
But we're on the same track.
Same track.
But, which is in my mind strictly an openness. You know,
yeah.
It's a matter of not having to fit into a little box of dogma.
Yeah.
Just never has made me happy. I've always had a million questions. And,
yeah.
And I like to be free to ask them all.
Free to ask them all, yeah. I guess you find the answers, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, interpreting, I've been very grateful for the Southern Baptism experience I had when I was in college, because I tried it on. I witnessed for Jesus, and I did all the whole trip trying, but you know, it didn't work. It just didn't complete my. So I assume I'll try anything for about 5 minutes to see if it makes a difference. You know.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't make a difference, then we'll go somewhere else.
I love the Lutherans. See, I love the music in the Lutheran church, and we were Lutheran for 2 years. I loved that. I like a piece of all of them.
Indeed, that's it. See, I did an internship in a Lutheran church and seminary,
did
and that's
you?
When I learned about liturgy. I had no experience with liturgy before, and that was a great gift.
Oh, it's a beautiful
gift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved all of that. Just
all
loved
it.
And would... Years later, I would catch myself with some of that music in my head, and what a
mm-hmm.
gift!
Mm-hmm.
What a blessing to have had that.
Mm-hmm.
And I can well imagine. I always think Lutherans look so peaceful, and I think that's why.
Lutherans are, you know, there. It depends on which Lutheran you're talking to.
Is that right?
There are some pretty nasty Lutherans, I think. Dogmatic. That's yeah. So. Yeah.
So, Joanne, I want to know about your experiences with suicide.
Oh,
suicide. Yes, I've done those. And it's they're hard. They are hard. Yes, but you know, there's a. I remember years ago. I've changed my mind. You know, Kubler-Ross was a great the great opener of the hospice movement and whatnot.
Yeah.
And she used to say she toned down her rhetoric somewhat on it because she was afraid she was going to invite people to commit suicide because death was looking so attractive. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's interesting because that's in a case like that, there's always a great point to bring forth, you know, a great, I used to think that, you know, from a spiritual point of view, we're given a certain life span in life, and I know a spiritual source once told me that if you committed suicide, you were stuck in that wavelength or frequency for the length of that contract. And it was very, very painful and hideous because here you were stuck in limbo, in effect, and watching the life you could have led and the effect you could have had in people's lives pass by because you weren't there to do it.
Do you think that's true?
I don't anymore, but I believe that, and I thought about, my God, isn't that hideous?
No, I've heard that, too, and I don't think that that's true.
I don't either. No, I don't think that's true.
I don't think that's true.
No.
I had a mystic say something like that to me one night, and it made about my brother, and it made me so mad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you cannot possibly know that.
No.
You know,
no.
They
no.
don't spout that at me. You know, it was like a fact, and I thought, no, dear, you're off base with that. But, you know, and who knows? The only thing I can come back to, and a minister said to me after Mel died, he said, you know, none of us know how much he suffered.
No.
Or how much he was suffering.
No.
And depression is a mental illness. It's an illness just like cancer.
Yeah.
But that's a hard grief process. That is the hardest grieving I've ever had to do.
You've had a personal experience with this and what you're saying.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
No, I would think it would be.
Yeah. It's like you, not only do you have all the questions, but what could I have done, and why didn't I do this, and why did, you know,
of
that going on. And then there's the abandonment on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And anger, tons of anger and rage and fury and whiny. Aren't you here with me? I need you now.
Yeah.
That stuff. It took me 10 years to get to the point that I would even really talk about it openly like I am with you. I talked to every minister and every human being I could find that would listen to me. And we all, you know, the whole family. Well, Dad died 6 months later, so we all had a horrible time with this thing. But, and we each have to do it our own way, you know. I thought, oh, good, I'm going to figure out how to do this, and then I can help somebody else. Wrong. You're not going to help anybody else for this thing.
No, it's just that, well, I think particularly of a young teenage boy who shot himself, and his sister found him. His sister was, killed himself, shot himself in the head. And another man did something and found him in a car. Grief is a great teacher, and what you just said, Joan, it really does exemplify that. I mean, because the process of grief takes one to the doors of all those parts of the soul that need healing.
Yeah.
And absolutely forge a new relationship to life as you go through it. So, what a gift your brother gave to you. My God, he really did help forge a whole new spiritual soul contact for you and your family, because That's what it does.
It's the closest, and I've said this to people, and nobody believes me, but I honestly believe it's true. I believe people who are grieving are the most connected.
Yes.
To, you agree with me? It's like having that baby.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that same thing. You're in a different dimension. Almost.
Yeah.
And all of it's happening inside, and the world is still spinning on the outside.
Yeah.
I remember being mad at the trees for growing.
Yeah. Oh, I can believe that, yes.
I can remember when
my mother was sick, I'd look at people and resent the fact they were standing there looking, they looked her age, and they were well. Why were they well?
Right. Right. Oh, yes. Like, how dare you? What do you mean you're buying groceries? You can't buy groceries. My brother's dead.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
Get out of that store. Go home.
Well, but
go home and mourn.
There are people, though, who will get into the bitterness and the victim role and never get out of it.
True.
And there, I mean, I that there's the real whoa.
Well, yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about it. That's their right to do that. But what a shame.
Did you got to heal yourself in all this? Yeah.
The suicide often runs through families. You'll see the one person committing suicide, and then others follow.
Yeah.
Now, that's really a biggie. Huge.
Yeah. Well, someone explained that to me one time, that it's like giving permission.
Yeah.
Once that's done, then someone has broken the ice and have, like, given permission on that. And I can understand that, too. It takes the...
Well, before we leave here, I do want to comment on a site, the Abraham Hicks site that you can get on Google, if you have the open mind and heart to listen to it, this channel has got some very good insights into this whole subject, and I would recommend it. That's the word, recommend.
Well, you know, all those psychics have no fear of death, and they all understand it, and they see it as being just a part of life. And
well, meditation helps.
Yeah, that's what I said. I've been saying the last few weeks here that if you meditate every day, and when some sort of blow it does inevitably occur, because losing somebody you love is very difficult, even no matter what your philosophy is. Just sitting with the pain is and sitting with it for however long is the only way to approach it.
Yeah.
Kate Biddy was trying to get on. I don't know if she still is.
No, let me look.
We've got an echo on here now too.
Yeah, we
have
an echo
now.
I hear it.
I worked on a suicide line for many years.
Oh, did you?
And I think there's just a lot of that whole thing of being in limbo. I mean, that didn't come from the suicide line, but that whole thing about being in limbo and all this judgment about people who commit suicide is just ridiculous. And then the whole families are shunned and so forth.
Yes.
But as a person who worked on a suicide line, there was this huge, serious push to prevent suicide.
Yeah.
And if we couldn't prevent it, then the way people acted was just unbelievable. I mean, you would think that they had failed and that they deserved to die too. I mean, it was the most unbelievable thing. And it took me for a while. I thought that people who committed suicide were very, very selfish. But I think it's much, much more that they are depressed. Like you say, Joan, it's a mental...
it's a choice that they make.
It's a choice that they make, and they are depressed.
Well, and the thing is, see, most of us, and I've been depressed too, so I speak a bit from experience here. But the majority of the population, we walk around and we have a survival instinct that takes over. But when you're that depressed, you lose that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's not there.
Right.
It's like you don't have your right arm.
Well,
It's not there.
It's like your eyes refuse to see anything but just the depression.
Right.
You can see nothing else. There's no openness.
There's no light.
A prison. There's no light. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I must say that to be quite honest with you, I think everybody, and that would be probably, there must be an exception somewhere, but everybody has had thoughts of suicide.
Sure.
I agree with you on that one.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, you just feel, it just comes over you quickly and then it goes away, but it's something that people don't like to acknowledge within themselves. I think if more and more people acknowledged it, they'd have more compassion for those who actually do commit suicide. It's just something that can happen to anybody or any all of us, you know.
Right.
Now, you know, before we finish this, we do have to say a good word for Khalil Gibran, his words on death, you know.
Okay,
You know, his words are great. Oh, my God, they're just...
Do you have something there?
If you would indeed behold the spirit of death, open your heart wide into the body of life. For life and death are one, even as the river and the sea are one. In the depths of your hopes and desires lies your silent knowledge of the beyond. And like seeds dreaming beneath the snow, your heart dreams of spring. Trust your dreams, for in them is hidden the gate of eternity. Your fear of death is but the trembling of the shepherd when he stands before the king, whose hand is to be laid upon him in honor. But is the shepherd not joyful because he's trembling, but that he shall wear the mark of the king? Yet is he not more mindful of his trembling? For what is it to die but to stand naked in the wind and to melt into the sun? And what is it to cease breathing but to free the breath from the restless tides, that it may rise and expand and seek God unencumbered? Only when you drink from the river of silence shall you indeed sing, and when you have reached the mountaintop, then you shall begin to climb. And when the earth shall claim your limbs, then shall you truly dance.
Mm.
Now, I mean, he was good. That's it. You can't do any better than that, can you? No.
Mm.
No.
Dear friends,
no.
Love is the answer, and love and joy and being happy, that's the way to do it.
That's right. laugh every day.
Yep. Well, I think all of your feelings, all of them. Is the answer to.
Oh, absolutely, yep.
There's one more person here. Let's see who this person is.
Oh, let's see
who
they got, yeah.
Hello?
This person is Betty.
Oh,
hello, Betty.
Hi, Kate. Hey, Joan.
Hi, Betty.
Hey, Bill.
Joanne, I just had to say admiration to you, and I thank you for your insight and your being here tonight, and I've enjoyed listening to you. And it was really neat to go through some of our experiences, right, Joan?
Oh, yeah. This is my sister, Joanne.
Oh, well, so great. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be a part of it, and I'm glad it made sense somewhere.
Well, it definitely does, and it is very inspirational to us, and I just had to say thank you.
You're
so I've enjoyed the show, and we'll talk more later.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
How many siblings do you have, Joan?
I have. There are just the three sisters left now.
Three sisters left. Me and
two sisters left, yeah.
Well, that's neat. That's neat.
But, we are.
I was virtually an only child, and only my sister was, I was 10 when she was born, and I was wanted. I had four kids because I thought it was just, you know, I need a kid needs siblings.
Well, we are four
years
apart,
lucky.
And we are all totally different.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, isn't it, Kate?
Oh yeah.
It's kind of like Kate Proud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Really enjoyed it. Yeah. Really enjoyed meeting your whole family, the whole family, except for your son Randy.
That's right. You met everybody but Randy, and we loved having you down. But it is wonderful to have sisters. I hate that my daughter does not have a sister.
Huh.
I think you share things with a sister you would not share with a brother.
I guess that's true. I never had that. Yeah, I had to find siblings in life later on.
Yeah.
Friendships. Yeah, because
adopt a few. Well, see, we adopted Kate too. We
yeah, no,
good
well, she's a keeper, all right. She's a keeper. Man, it's a screw, yes.
Okay, well, listen, we're gonna sign off now, and
thank
Joanne,
you so much.
Thank you,
Joanne. It was wonderful.
We all did. It was just tremendous. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
We're gonna listen to music for Mother and Child, and you can buy this music on www.praytoheal.com.